to you. In introducing the chairman for this session, I would just like to continue the pasuk, Yisem Nikir, Mi Hashem, Mi Yisrael. Very clearly, Rabbi Sif, who I've had the distinction and the pleasure of knowing now most well for this past year at JSS, is one who personifies just this pasuk in his love of Torah, in his love and special relationship to the Talmidim, in our yeshiva, and in his busman's holiday, heading the kollel for JSS in Kiev, Orasha. It's a pleasure to introduce an individual who, as the pasuk itself tells us, that we have a phenomenal obligation of being nothing less of ambassadors of Kutcher Brichu, a person who you have to is Hashem Lokecha, as the Gemara Yuma says, Shehei Shem Shamayim Mishai Vayadacha. I'm most proud to present such a person to act as the chairman for this session, who personifies the ideas which Saturday and Shia are presented thereupon. Rabbi Sif.
Thank you very much. In case you don't know, that's my boss. Or at least in the first level, under Rabbi Lam. Truth is, I was sitting next to Rabbi Lipstein at dinner, and I asked him, "You staying for the shir?" He said, "Of course, that's why I came." I told them, me too. Because when they first asked me to be chairman, my reaction was, of course, no. As a good soldier, never volunteer. But then, when they were talking and the committee said that the guest of honor and the Rosh HaMedabrim will be Rabbi Schechter and Rabbi Levine, I said, listen, for them, I'll come to listen. And it truly is a great delight, an honor, a very special honor to be able to introduce both the guest of honor, as you've just heard at the dinner, and the individual who's going to give a shiur. Both individuals, by the way, are posel eidos for each other. They're a sheni b'sheni. I found out they're first cousins. Both Rabbi Schechter and Rabbi Dr. Aaron Levine. They're speaking, the topic is V'yisem Nekiyim Yashem Yisrael. A very relevant topic today because the limur in the yeshiva, particularly in our yeshiva, in addition to limur HaTorah for its own sake, is lilmod amanas lasos, to learn in order to practice and to show how Torah not only makes an individual wiser but elevates an individual and makes an individual holier and better in the Torah sense, closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yisem Nekiyim Hashem Yisrael means that an individual must be better by limud HaTorah. Of course, only if Zocha. Zocha nas lo samkayim, lo zocha kas v'shalom. It's not good. And the two speakers we have for today, as you've heard, are paragons of Zocha. The topic is V'yisem Nekiyim Hashem Yisrael. Rabbi Schechter has chosen as his topic the way a concern for the Das HaKohol or for individuals has an effect upon the Halacha. And the way a posek must take into consideration the individuals for whom he is paskening. I have the great honor and privilege to present to you the Rosh HaKolel, Rav Herschel Schechter. Last year, before the summer, I was asked to give a talk, I wouldn't call it a shiur, a talk on the topic of how to paskin Shabbos. So in an hour and a half, I solved all the world's problems, and he gave all the klali harah, so you know how to paskin a Shabbos based on the halakha. I was asked for today's occasion to give a talk, not really a shiur, on what additional considerations, a Rav must have in mind when he passes the Shara outside of what it says the famous black and white in the Shara. What additional considerations should a person have in mind when he does the mitzvahs, when he fears up like a frumayid, in addition to what it says actually black and white? So today's talk is really part two of the original talk. There was a famous story about the Chofetz Chaim who was once traveling, going to Radin, and there was a businessman traveling on the train with him, and he asked him, "Are you from Radin? Do you know the Chofetz Chaim?" So he said, "Yes." You know, he said that he was the Chofetz Chaim. So he asked him, "Is he really such a great tzaddik like they say?" So he didn't want to have bricks. He started to tone it down. "Is he really such a chassid? Really such a kaddish? Really such a talmid chacham?" So he didn't want to say how great he was, so he was knocking everything down. So this Balabos got very angry. He said, "Well, shake it to the Mavazah the Chofetz Chaim. He doesn't realize what is going on the tzaddik here." So later on, when he came to town and he realized that was the Chofetz Chaim, when he came to Radin, he came into the Beis Medrash, he realized that was the Chofetz Chaim. So he went to ask forgiveness from him while he was Mavazah him as they were traveling on the train. So the story goes that the Chofetz Chaim told him at that time that it was really his fault, it was his own fault. Famous story. He said, "I wrote a whole sefer Chofetz Chaim all about Lashon Hara, all of the dinim and the prati aloch is that you're not allowed to tell Lashon Hara about someone else, and I left out this major din, you're not allowed to have Lashon Hara against yourself. A person's not allowed to tell Lashon Hara against himself." But he was mevazeh himself, he was mezalvel on his own cover. So the Rav was once telling over the story in Shia, so he mentioned that he doesn't think it's really a great chiddush, this great oiftu from the Chofetz Chaim, that you're not allowed to tell Lashon Hara against yourself. He said, "What's the side of the din? When does mechila? When can a person be merchel? When can a person not be merchel? You can be merchel if you're the bailam. If you're not the bailam, then I can't be merchel. If somebody owes you money, I can't be merchel. Ain't on a merchel davar shein shalach. So can a person be merchel on his own reputation? Does a person own his own reputation?" So that's exactly what the Mishnah says in Shkolim in Perek Gimel, that those who went in to take the matzah shekel money from the Beis Hamikdash and go buy the korbanos with it, we're not permitted to go in with shoes on, not permitted to have any pockets in their clothing, not permitted to have any hands or sleeves or anything, to make sure that no one would be choshed them that they're taking the money. So what if they don't care? So you see, for the Mishnah calls the person the Eastern Kim, Hashem and Israel. You have so many times in the Gemara, a din of chashadah. What is said of the din of chashadah? That if I will convey the mistaken impression to somebody else, then I may be doing an aveira. This itself is forbidden, even though I'm not makpid, I'm oichal on my reputation. So you see, for the mission of this halacha of the Chofetz Chaim, this kiddush that was in Scharish to the Chofetz Chaim after he met this balabos on the train with the whole incident, states in the mission that a person doesn't own his own reputation, and therefore he's not a bailam to be oichal on his reputation. There is a famous comment by the Radbaz and the Rambam, the end of the Sanhedrin. The Rambam discusses why you don't accept the person's own admission to give dini nefashis or to give dini malchus. So the Rambam gives a whole explanation. Maybe the person wants to commit suicide, maybe he wants to kill himself, and he's afraid, so he wants to come to Bezin to admit that he's chayav nisa, so that they should kill him. And then he says, "No, it's Gzeiras HaKosav," so he beats around the bush. So then the Radbaz has a comment on that Rambam. He says a different time. He says, "Bechlal, you cannot say it's not like either time that the Rambam gives." He says a third time. Because the pasuk in Navi says, "Haneshama is lihein," the neshama belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and you say, "Hagad, balvin kimeidim domi." If the person is the balvin, so I can be made to give away my money, but my neshama doesn't belong to me, so I'm not a balvin. I'm not a balvin to be made on my neshama. That's the pashtus like that. It's what the Radbaz says. That means the Rambam is strange. Why do they have to give different reasons? I heard what the Radbaz says is certainly correct.
We have a din that one is not permitted to commit suicide. So lechora that's a clear indication that the person's life doesn't really belong to himself. It's not about him. And the same is true regarding chovel b'yatzno. The din is that not only is there an issur to be chovel b'achim, there's an issur to be chovel b'yatzno. Again, because the person's body doesn't belong to himself. He only owns his property, he doesn't own his own body. The Gemara says, also b'yad l'lachbo b'yatzno, sugim perak ha-chovel. Rav Zevin has a long essay about this. In his collection, Lior ha-halocha, Rav Zevin's whole life has an essay that's entitled Mishpat Shailach. Whether the person owns his own body, whether he owns his own life. So he quotes all of these marmakamas with many, many more. Temus is a difficult tshuva in the Binyan Sion in connection with this. It's a nicer now in Eretz Yisrael, Medina Yisrael, with the autopsies that they tumor over there so much. So the Binyan Sion has a tshuva l'aloha, is it permissible to do an autopsy in the Tucha Mesim, it needs to be Zoyramet. So it's not more chomer than eating chazer, not more chomer than being Mechal Shabbos. So one is allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh purposes. He is more committed to make an autopsy on a dead body if it looks Karav Levadai, that the doctors will gain some new medical knowledge, some new information which will probably help them in curing the sick people now. It's a Pikuach Nefesh, a Sofik Pikuach Nefesh. Would you be Mata Nituha Mesim, Sofik Pikuach Nefesh? So then that Yehuda has a tshuva where he says, Achayim Lefaneinu, you Mata, not. No, Yehuda says sometimes we'll Mata and sometimes not. And the Binyan Tzion comes out with a big chumri, he says never, ever. Cannot be Mata. Why? So he quotes the Gemara in Perak HaKoneis, where the Gemara has a discussion. The Gemara says, Dovra Melech had a suffix, whether it's Muta Mahas Latzma Mama Chavera. Not, and the Gemara comes to the conclusion that he asked the Sanhedrin, he said, Osa. Osa Lahas Latzma Mama Chavera. Not permitted to save your life by stealing or by burning down someone else's farm. That was the case there. The Plishtim were hiding out, let's say the PLO was hiding out on a farm. And the only way to get them is by bombing the whole area. But we're going to destroy the property of the Eden. Not kill any life, just destroy the property of the Jews. Are we allowed to destroy the property of the Jews in order to kill the righteous? So the Gemara has a Lashon Pasur. Pasur, Lahat Las Mama Haver, that's the Maskamas Hagmar. So Rashi learned the Gemara Kipshuta is Takos. Very Shver, so all of the Mishnah Melech has and the Parashas Drachem, a whole essay on it. How can it be? How can it be that it's Pasur? It's Pikuach Nefesh, it's very Shver, Rashi. So Taisus and the Rosh and the Tour say it doesn't mean that it's Pasur, it means that it's Muta Lahat Las Mama Haver, but you have to pay later on. That was Maskamas. As kind of like you can burn down the farm and get the enemies there, you can kill all of the rights, but you'll have to pay for the hezek done, even though the hezek was done, by even shall be caught now. So that's the way we pass from our law. So the Lashon that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that's what the Binyan Tzion has been done. The Lashon that's in Shulchan Aruch says, it's muta lahat latzma mamach aveiro, if he has the mind to pay later on. I'm going to ask to pay. So it says a chiddush. What happens if the person will burn down the farm in order to do the pikuach nefesh, shalei al das, shalei al manas to pay back later on. So he says from the lashon of the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, he sees that it's us. So he says, no, if the person is alive, and you do an aveir ben adam mahaveir while he's alive, kidei lahat to pikuach nefesh, so then you have the day to make good later on, to pay back, to be merita, to ask mechila, whatever. So that's al das to repay. But if the person is dead already, he's going to do an autopsy on his body, so he times that then, tidisa binodam lachaveiro, and there's not al manas to make good, to rectify later on, so there's no hedge. Even for pikuach nefesh purposes. That's why in Eretz Yisrael, Medina Yisrael, they had to pass a law that if a person dies, and the relatives refuse, the Medina gave in to this thing and gave in, that if the relatives refuse to allow an autopsy, even if there's mamash achorim lefanein with a vada pikuach nefesh, so if they refuse to allow an autopsy, you don't have to, the doctor's not allowed to make the autopsy. Whoever wants to be choshish for the Binyan Tzion can prevent the hatzoros nefashis for the other people. So premise, it's a very difficult shuva. First of all, the etzem idea, they say that it's muta lahat latz no mahavera al das to pay up later on. Why should it be muta? What is it? A lava nita glasa? The Gemara says we're learning makat now. A lava nita glasa ain't like the mola. Because the essay is menatik the lav. So it means that you're permitted lachatzila to do the lav, al das to do the essay later on. That's how the Shagasari has tacked place. It says in the Psochim, in the second paragraph of Psochim, that there's an Issa by Yerob Bari Motzei. The Tosis has a Gemara by Pidyon Hegdish. The Tosis shows from the Gemara that we see it's Muta Lahashas Chameitz
Amanas Levaya. Hamash Chamas Amanas Levaray doesn't violate the law. So the Shabbatai says, how can it be? What do you mean? That Lav Hanitik Lesi, it's always permissible Lachatil to violate the law of that if you have on the smach, if you have in mind that you're going to fulfill the essay later on. He's not against the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Agdei Avonas Lahase." Agdei Avonas Lushalim Kefil Azos. The Gemara says, "Mevav Mitzia." The Gemara says, "In Matis that Zela is a lava nitik lase because Vehishim is like Zela." So let it always be permissible to steal if you have a mind to give back later on. So the Shabbos Sai says, "Alpi Parsh." This is seen from the Gemara that there is no such thing that a lava nitik lase. You're permitted to violate the law, but that's to do the essay later on. And here also, it's very difficult just to visualize such a concept, just to be mastic such a thing. Also, lachbo b'chaveiro, or also lachazik chaveiro. There's an iser, not to be mastic, not to be chayvel, but if you're chayvel and you're mastic, having to pay it, to pay up later on, then it's mutter if you have to talk nefesh thrown in. The whole combination is so complicated. It's very difficult to understand why this should be so. But even leaving out this, that the whole combination of considerations and factors is so difficult, the Yatzim Svara that he says is shver. What do you mean that a chayvel b'chaveiro? Let's say amazik, odem amazik, the case in Perakachain is when I burn down someone else's farm. So that's odem amazik, that's an issue, but odem l'chaveiro, because the moment belongs to the other person, he owns the moment. But if I'm chayvel on someone else's goof, so that's an issa ben adam l'chaveiro? No, it's an issa also ben adam l'chbo b'yatzmo. He's not permitted to be chayvel even b'yatzmo. So see, it's not an issa ben adam l'chaveiro. It's not that he owns his goof and I'm being mazikin. So what should I have to say over here? It's muta l'chbo b'chaveiro amnas l'chreya. I'm an ass to make good, and if it's not amnas to make good, it's not muta. The whole tshuva is very sure. The pashtus is that a person's life doesn't belong to him, and a person's body doesn't belong to him, and a person's reputation doesn't belong to him. This is what we learn out from the psukim. That from the din of suicide we see that the life doesn't belong to the person, and Hashem is lihen, as the Radvaz writes on the Rambam, and that the person's body doesn't belong to him, we see from the din of also liyadam lachbo biyatzmo, and the person's reputation doesn't belong to him either. He's not the father man, as we see from this din of Yisim Nikim Hashem and Yisrael. The Gemara has this halacha in different places where they quote different psukim. Sometimes the Gemara quotes the pasuk, like in Yevamos Dav Chav Dalam Beis, the Gemara quotes the pasuk in the Mishle. Pasuk Mincha Ikshus Peh, Luzuz Fasan Harchek Mimeka. The Achrayim have a hard time explaining why the Mishle Mishkolim quotes one pasuk and the Gemara in Yevamos quotes a different pasuk. Aren't they driving at the same thing? It's a difficulty, but l'chari, this is what the Gemara is saying. That the reputation does not belong to the individual. In this sense, it doesn't really make any difference whether the aver that the bichoshid that I'm doing is an aver the rice or an aver the rabbanon. This is the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says regarding the Chanukah, Achatz Shiyesh Lo Shnei Psachim, the person has to be malik the Chanukah on both sides, because there'll be an issue a chashad that someone may think that he's not lighting Chanukah in there. So the Gemara says, "Minot Teimer the Hashina la Hashad." How do you know that there is an Isra of Hashad? So the Gemara quotes a brayse that when a person leaves Peya, he has to leave the Peya b'seif hasodah. Why? So the brayse lists off different reasons. So one reason is that everybody should see that the Peya is there. There shouldn't be any Hashad. So the Acharonim asked, how did the Gemara know to jump from Peya, which is a din de raisa, to Hadlokas Tan Chanukah, which is a din de rabbanon? You see that there's no jump. The Gemara assumes that it's Hanu Ha. How do you know that you worry about Chashor? So the Bina Rav from Peya, the Hadlakas Nair is Chanukas. You see that whenever there's a Chashash of Chashor, it doesn't make any difference whether the Chashab will be that the person is violating an Issa Deraisa and Issa Derabbanon. He's vital ruining his reputation. This is what the Gemara has in Yuma, that Pevel from an Aleph. Gemara gives the Abroch, Hiluki Kapore. So the last one of the Hiluki Kapore is Chil Hashem. Person violates an aver of Chil Hashem, so then even Tshuva and Yom Kippurim and Yisurim, everything is only Tola and only Yom HaMisa is Mechap. So the Gemara gives an example, Hei Chedam Chil Hashem. So Rav says, if I go to the butcher shop and I don't pay right away, if I'm Chavim goes to the store and doesn't pay right away, the Galabatim who are watching may think that he doesn't plan to pay, that he doesn't have any money, he's going to keep the meat and never pay, or delay the payment. So the Gemara gives this as an example of Chil Hashem. means that he's violating the Yisrof Hashem. Why exactly is this called Chilul Hashem? Chilul Hashem usually means that it's something much different. So remember Rav Gerelik, should be well explained, as just told us over Rav Chaim Volozhin, and he writes in Nefesh HaChaim. He says before in Nefesh HaChaim, what pshat is not Gemara? Why is it called Chilul Hashem? So Rav Chaim Volozhin writes, "Lo yichav haaretz kevoda, the Shechina is all over." And when there's somebody who doesn't have air, the Shechina is mistalek. So there's a chilul. Hashem, chilul means empty, vacuum, empty space. The Ribbono Shel Olam runs away. Not only when a person doesn't have air, does the Shechina run away. Like the Gemara has a lotion. Ein ani v'hu yichelim modur v'olam ke'echa. I don't want to live together with that person. The Gemara has an abalgai in a different context. But here also the Gemara says when a person doesn't have air, so the Ribbono Shel Olam runs away. And not only when the person does an avera, when people think that a person is doing an avera, so also the Shechina is mitztayer, and the Shechina runs away. So that's what the Gemara calls it, a chilul Hashem. This is especially to be considered, this problem of chashoda, is especially to be considered if it's a Talmid Chacham who is doing the action. As Rav says, when a balabas buys meat in the butcher shop and he doesn't pay the bill, Rav didn't say that it's a chilul Hashem. When a Talmid Chacham does it, then it's a chilul Hashem. Why? So one reason you could say that the balabatim is time to pick on the rabbonim more than on others. They'll tend to be choshed the rabbonim or the Rosh Yeshiva more than other people. Perhaps that's pshat. But perhaps there's another additional consideration over here. We have a klal in the Gemara that the whole Mesilas Yishorim is based on. The Gemara has the Brisa of Pinchas Ben Yoyim, the end of the first portion of the Zorah. The Torah revealed is Sehiris, and the Sehiris revealed is Rizus and so on, to Ruach HaKodesh and Chis HaMes and so on. So from that Gemara we see that a person who learns Torah is supposed to be a better person than others. And in fact, it's interesting, the halacha, if they say the talk from Hadarta, from Ezok, and the mitzvah to the Mechabah, the Talmud Chacham, to stand up in the presence of the Talmud Chacham. So the Gemara has a lotion in Kiddushin and Aflam Gimel and Bey, is that Romi Bar Yecheskel was the son of Abicheskel. His father was a Balabos. Abicheskel was a Balabos. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Bar Yecheskel used to teach his father Torah. When he came back from Yeshiva, he was the Rebbe of his father. So the Gemara says, when the father came in, he used to stand up for the father. So the Gemara says, oh, Philpa, why does he stand up for the father? The father should have to stand up for him. He was being unlearned. The Gemara says, oh, Rabbi Cheskel, no, that's a different story. Shani Rabbi Cheskel, the Baal Maisim had, he was a big tzaddik. He was a very much of a medaktik for mitzvahs, as we know, that even Shmuel would stand up and Rabbi Cheskel would come into the Beis Medrash. So we should have discussed the Shmuel and the Rosh Hashiva. So why did Shmuel stand up in the presence of Rabbi Cheskel? All right, Rabbi Bar Yecheskel was a son. The son stands up and the father comes in. What did Shmuel stand up for? He was a balabas. Rabbi Cheskel was a balabas. So the Gemara says, Shani Rabbi Cheskel, the Baal Maisim Havi, he was a big tzaddik. So the Ran, there in Kiddushin, in the Daphne and the Rif, it's Yudal and Maralov, the Ran quotes the Ramban who discusses this topic. Discusses this in Kudim. The Ramban says Rabbi Cheskel was older than him. He stood up because Matan Sefer Tochum, he was over 16, he was younger than 16. That's why he stood up. So what is the Gemara bringing it in connection with Rabbi Bar Yecheskel standing up for the father, not the reverse, if that's the issue. So he says what the Gemara is driving at is to demonstrate that it's not a bizarre atayra that Shmuel should stand up for this old man, for the Balabas. It's not a bizarre atayra for Rami to stand up for his father either. It's not bizarre atayra. The Ran disagrees though. The Ran says from the Gemara it would appear that Baal Maisim Havi is not only a reason why it's not a bizarre in HaTorah, Baal Maisim Havi is the reason why you have to stand up. That's the chiyuv to stand up. Not because it is a Zohar who is an older man, much older than Shmuel and Rami. So the Ran has an interesting explanation. He thinks that the chiyuv to stand up for Talmud Chacham is not so much out of Kavod HaTorah. He says the chiyuv to stand up is to be mechaber the fellow who's a Yirei Shamayim. But we have no bechinas on Yirei Shamayim, Iran says. Give bechinas in the yeshiva and the kollel so you can tell who knows how to learn better than whom. So the din is, whoever knows how to learn better, the one who does better on the bechina, we know that he's on a higher level of learning. We have no way to test whether a person is a greater Yirei Shamayim than the other.
how can you tell? Yerushalayim is all inward. So the Rambam says, the Torah tells us from Pnei Seva Tochum, Hadarta Pnei Zochum, you have to be Mechabit the Talmud Chochum, because you have to assume the Talmud Chochum is the greater Yerushalayim than the other people. That the more Lidun HaTorah a person has, so the more we assume the higher his level of Yerushalayim will be. And that's the yisod of the din, he said. That's the yisod of the din of Hadarta Pnei Zochum. It's not so much Kovod HaTorah. The Gemara seems to say Tarkeret in one place. The Gemara says, if Nelom Deha, come in Miponeha Lekoshkin, how do you know you have to stand up for Sefer Torah? It's a spirit of the Ram, but the Ram claims that this is the Kavon in this Gemara. He says this Gemara indicates that the mitzvah to stand up for Talmud Chacham is not so much out of Kavod HaTorah. Tarkeret is Kavod Yerushalayim, and because he's on a higher level of learning, we assume that he must necessarily be, he must definitely be on a higher level of Yerushalayim. Of course, sometimes we know it's not so. You know, Talmid HaChamim who are not Yirei Shamayim. That's what was mentioned earlier this afternoon, that the Gemara tells us that in Arab Demi Baal Hashem Tzvach is about your term of P. If you know Mefurish that a Talmid HaChamim, a very outstanding Talmid HaChamim, is not Yirei Shamayim, so you're not allowed to learn by him. But if you don't know one way or the other, the Ran says that the Pasuk is telling us we must assume that the higher the level of learning the person has attained, so the more he is a Yirei Shamayim. So here, in connection with the Yisur of Chashod of Emes, the Gemara has in many places Adam Choshev Shani. So the Rishonim explain three different interpretations. Gemara has a lot of times something is really Mutter, but Adam Choshev Shani is not allowed to do it. And all the time, whenever the Gemara has that, it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Adam Choshev Shani. Gemara has it all over. Gemara has it in Masech HaShavuz Bam, in Nochri, and in Moikot, and by Avelis, and in Ripis, and in many places. Gemara has it all over. It's not limited. In the Imamis, in the Mr. Behetzer, and everything. All over you find it. So one of the explanations of Aruch Hashem Shani is because the Balabatim will see that the person is doing this and they'll think that he's doing an Avera, this will be a greater Chilul Hashem. When a Balabas does an Avera, or when people are Cheshit that a Balabas is doing an Avera, that's one level of Chilul Hashem. When people are Cheshit that the Talmud Chacham is doing an Avera, this is a higher level of Chilul Hashem. That's why Rav says, the great Anor, when I go shopping in the store and I don't pay, it's a higher level of Chilul Hashem. Chashad about Talmud Chacham is worse because, as the Gemara says, the Talmud Chacham who learns more Torah should really be more of a medaktik b'mitzvah. So the fact that people think that he's violating the averus would be an indication that he's not really learning Torah l'shmo. Mishnah says, I'm learning Torah l'shmo, zecha l'dvarim ha'avri, zecha to the Yerushalayim.
It makes a greater Chilul Hashem in us. This is one of the considerations that a person must have when paskening shailas and when feelings of his own hanhoge, especially a Talmud Chacham, in public. He has to keep in mind what perception will the others have of him. Will they realize that what he's doing is mutter, or will they be choshed him to think that he's doing an aver? And in this sense, with respect to this inyan, the Gemara says clearly in Shabbos that there's no distinction between a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan. The Gemara has another consideration, another point that a person should keep in mind. He should take into consideration what the perception of the others will be of what he's doing or what he's paskening at the time that he's doing. This is what the Gemara calls marisayin. I heard him point out that Marisayin and Chashod are not really identical. Chashod means people will think that what I'm doing is wrong. Marisayin means people will think that what I'm doing is right. I'm a Talmud Chacham, I'm a Tzaddik, what I'm doing is right, but they won't fully understand what I'm doing. So they'll think that I'm doing one thing, and they'll think that that's Mutter, and I'm really doing a different thing. The conditions are completely different. So they'll learn to be Matir, they'll learn to be Mekel on the Dovah HaAsur. This is a different Isra of Marisayin. This is really a form, this is an extension of the din of lichnivel or sita michshol. I'm not permitted to be marshal somebody else, bekumba yasei. The ikar pasuk is to convince someone to do an aveira, to give someone macholos asuras. Lichnivel or sita michshol. Here we have a form of lichnivel, b'shevi al taseh. I'm not going out of my way to be marshal somebody else. I'm just leading my own normal life. I'm doing my mitzvahs the way I normally do. I'm passing shabbat the way I normally do. But because balabatim or others may think that I'm doing something in a certain oifen, and that's really awesome, but I'm not doing that. So I'm not allowed to do that thing, lest I'll mislead them into believing that that's really mutta. So I need to lift the al-fas. Here, there's already a whole discussion in the post-king, what's the din of Lifnei with respect to a din de Rabban? What's the din of Marisayim with din of de Rabban? So the Gemara in the end of the first parak of Avodah Zarah says clearly that even regarding Melechas Chalamoy, there is an Isser of Lifnei Iver L'sita Michshel. I'm not permitted to rent my soda, my field, to a Kusi who's Chashin on doing Melechas Chalamoy because of Lifnei Iver. The Tosis comments on that Gemara, there is a Machlokes in Marikotin, regarding Malachas Chalamayr, whether it's an Issa Deraisa and Issa Derabbanon, in this Gemara you see that Malachas Chalamayr must be an Issa Deraisa. If it's only an Issa Derabbanon, how can you speak of a violation of Lifniva, Lesita, and Mirksha? There's no Lifniva on Derabbanon, that's what Taisa says. There must be a Raif in the Gemara that Malachas Chalamayr is an Issa Deraisa. Then Taisa says, no, what's the Raif? Maybe it's a Raif. How did you assume that there's no Lifniva on Issa Derabbanon? Maybe it's a Raif. There's Lifniva on Issa Derabbanon. Did he have a right to one or the other? So then it's 2 days in Tosfos. Totally deserved. Just not logically totally deserved, but just what do you see from this Gemara? The two opinions that Tosfos has in Chagigin and Moikot, what the Melachas Chalamot is the Raisa of the Rabbanon, has two parallel days over here. How do we interpret this Gemara in Moikot? Do you have an Issur Lifnei Iver and Issurim de Rabbanon? Look, so of course, if there's no din of Lifnei Iver and Issurim de Rabbanon, so there won't be a din of Marisayin and Issurim de Rabbanon. There's no Lifniva Bukumbi Aseh, so there's no Marasayim. Marasayim is an Issa Lifniva B'Shevi Al-Taseh. Hashara there certainly will be. Hashara there is. Hashara applies equally to the Raisas and the Rabbonis. That's the Gemara Bahad Lokas Neris Chanukah, that the Gemara derives in Peyah. But if the Hashash, the thing that I'm worrying about the other person's perception, is not so much that he'll think, it all depends who the people are who are watching. Will they think that I'm doing an Aveira? Or the Hasidim of mine, they'll think that I'm doing a mitzvah, they don't think that I'm doing everything right, and I'll misunderstand what I'm doing, and I'll mislead them into doing an aveir. See, if I'm worried about them being chayshid that I'm doing an aveir, then even if the whole issue is one derabbanon, there is a din of chashad and a din derabbanon. But if there's such Hasidim of mine that they will never think that I'm doing any aveir, the only thing is they'll think that I'm doing a soul, that this is mutter, and I'm really doing something else, and that thing is really also. So that's a shaila whether this would apply to Lifnei, whether Lifnei Iver applies to Din of the Rabbanon. So there's a famous Ramah, the Simen Pei Zayin in Yerideya, with respect to Bas B'Chala, where the Ramah seems to say that the simple reading of the Ramah is that there's no Din of Marisayin on Din of the Rabbanon. The Shach disagrees with the Ramah and says that it cannot be, that not only they have Lifnei Iver, the Kumbi Asay, applicable to Din of the Rabbanon, you can have this Lifnei Iver B'Shevi Al-Tasa, this Marasayim also applies. Marasayim does apply to Din of the Rabbanon. The only thing that Tosfos says in Ksuvos Daf Samach is that there's no Chadri Chadorif on Din of the Rabbanon. The Gemara usually has a cloud that come up and shows a Chachamim Bnei Marasayim, Afil B'Chadri Chadorim also. Tosfos said that's limited to Din of the Rabbanon, but in Din of the Rabbanon that doesn't apply. Some Achronim reinterpret the Ramah. The Pesachei Teshuva and the Nachas Tzvi has a long Arichas, and the Chavis Yoy writes like that, that's what the Ramah meant. The Ramah is talking about Chadri Chador. He's not eating the Chol of Shteda with the chicken in a banquet, not eating in public. He's eating a Chadri Chador, he's eating in his kitchen, in his own house. The Chadri Chador, that's what the Ramah means, that it doesn't apply to Din of the Rabbah. And others interpret the Ramah Kipshuto, the Yeshua himself interprets the Ramah Kipshuto. He says the Ramah has a Mokam, he has a Mokam in the Gemara Ksuvos, that there's no Lifnei Iver. Even if one should assume that there is Lifnei Iver on Din of the Rabbanon, but there is no Din of Marisayin on Din of the Rabbanon. It means Lifnei Iver, B'Shevi Al-Tasa, should not apply. In connection with this, the Nevi Yehuda has a Chiddush. He suggests that maybe if we should be Machmer like the Shach, that even this Lifnei Iver, B'Shevi Al-Tasa, that we call Marasayin, even if we should assume that this applies even to an Aveir de Rabbanon, this should only be on a Chad de Rabbanon. He wants to say if you have a Shvuz de Shvuz, a double de Rabbanon, a Trey de Rabbanon, that then he thinks everybody should agree with the Ramah. Everybody should agree that there's no, how far do you go with the Lifnei Iver? So we should say Lifnei Iver, B'Shevi Al-Tasa, you're not going to have to worry about if the Yisa that the people will be misled to violate is only a Shvuz de Shvuz, is only a Trey de Rabbanon. The question, how far you go. It's interesting, the Gemara has a Sanhedrin that family days Gemara says, my Rav went to Bovel, so he got Slicha from Rabbi Yehuda Amasi, so he got Yoyre, Yodin, and Yat Bechara, so he didn't get. It is that when a Bechara has a Mum Kavua, so you may shep it Chutz LaMikdash. So that you had, there was a special smicha that they have to have, that the Rabban had to have in order to pass in on a mum that wasn't obviously a mum kavur. So mom is missing a leg, so the Mishnah says you can get three balabatim to pass in as missing a leg, it's a mum kavur. But if it's something delicate, not so obvious, so then you have to have a special rav who's a musmach, who's a yatab chere smicha, that he should be able to pass in as it's a mum kavur. So the Gemara wants to know, how come Rab didn't get it? If Rab Baba Chana got that smicha yatab chere, how come Rab didn't get yatab chere? The Gemara gives two reasons. So one time the Gemara asks, could it be that Rab wasn't such a minu halachas? He wasn't such a baki in the behemoth. He didn't know the moment. He didn't know physically what it looks like. Gemara says it can't be. Rab said that he spent 18 months on a farm just to learn zechus what the behemoth looked like, to know what's a mum kavur and a mum eiver. So the Gemara says he must have been quite a baki in 18 months. So why didn't Rebbe give him the smicha yatab cheres? And the Gemara says, no, he had a senes. That's exactly the reason why. Because Rav was such a big baki, the Gemara says, mishumha gufa. For this reason, gufa, he didn't get the yatab cheres. So the Gemara's notion is, the Rabbi kibu mumi tfei. Rav was a very big baki in the mumi. Vishori mumi de lo yadin, shin he would be matar a mum, that he knew 100% based on his idea that that would be a mum kavua. But lo yad yinshi, people wouldn't realize that that's a mum kavur. They would think that it's a mum eiver. And they'd say that Rav is not there. Be amri, and the people would say, ki ha gavna shari Rav. They would say, Rav is not there, such a thing. So as to the mishri mum eiver, the people would be misled later on to pass in kayotis, but on another case, that they'll also be matar a mum eiver. So it's a story in the Gemara. So the ayin mishpat sechen zan to look in Yeridei. Usually the ayin mishpat tells you the marma kaimis where a din is quoted. Here on this story, he tells you to look in the Yeridei. There's a misprint on the side. It's in a Reishman Bey, Sif Yud. It says Sif Tet, supposed to be Sif Yud. So in the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber quotes from Rishonim that we derive from this Gemara, this cloud, that a Chacham is not permitted to paskin a strange psak in public, a milsa de tmiya in public. Because if he doesn't fully explain what he's talking about, the Balabatim will walk away and think that the rabbi said that this is mutter and that's mutter, and they'll think that everything is mutter. They misunderstand what the psak is. It's interesting, some showed him on the side of the Yeridei, when they quote that din, the Chacham was not permitted to pass from the Milsa de Tmiya in public. So in the Shiuri Brocha printed on the side of the Yeridei, the Chidor quotes from the Havoras Maimini and other Rishonim, they give two timing. One time is based on the Gemara, this Gemara, that it's a problem of Marisai, and that the people, it's Alif Ne'ibir B'Shev Yachas, and the people will be misled, be Mati Kayotzibo, and a case which is really Yasser. And some other Rishonim blend in another Lashon, that the Balabatim will think that the Rav is paskening wrong. They think the Rav is making a mistake. Everybody knows that that's also, what was Yimater over here? So they blend in two timing. They're talking about a situation where we don't know what the Balabatim will think. Some Balabatim may think that he's paskening wrong. So then you have an Isa Hashada, what the Rav paskening wrong. Other Balabatim will think, how can the Rav paskening wrong? Must be right, but don't misunderstand what the facts are. So then you have the problem of Marasa. The both problems are to be considered. And here also, the Rishonim comment on these several Gemaras, but the Gemara has Adam Choshev Shaini, that the Talmud Chacham has to be machmer on certain things that are really mutam mikra din. So some Rishonim interpret because it will be made, people will think that he's doing an issa. There'll be a problem of chashada. Another Rishonim interpret slightly differently, or completely differently, that if the Adam Chosher will be noyik heter on this, so Balabatim will think, well, if that's mutafim for him, so then more is mutafim for me. Because the Talmud Chacham, we assume, is always on a higher level than the Balabatim. Let's say if the Rabbanim will walk around in sports jackets, sports suits, so then the Balabatim will walk around in shorts, whatever. Balabatim are so many, Rebbe and Yeshiva and the Talmidim, so the Talmidim are so many, assume that they are so many levels lower than the Rebbe and Yeshiva. So the Rebbe and Yeshiva has to be more machmer, the Rabbanim have to be more machmer than the Balabatim and the Talmidim. They have to be machmer in dress, they have to be machmer in zahiris and dinimominis, they have to be machmer in the Morris says gezel v'arayis, are the two problems, shenafsha shalodah machmedosom. these should be the two key areas where the Rabbanim should be machmir for themselves, so that if the Balei Batin look up to the Rabbi, even if they'll hold that they can be 10 madrigas lower, 20 madrigas lower, they should still be within the area of Hetter. They should still be doing the Dovah Amut and not be violating the Dovah Haas. And the Gemara tells us in Makkos, we're going Makkos this year, the Gemara says in the second paragraph of Makkos, why does the Kohen Gadol have to die in order that the Ritzach should have a kapara? What's Zeh Shuldit? The Rotzchim and their families used to be misparal that the Kohen Gadol should drop dead. And sometimes the tefillahs were accepted, the Kohen Gadol would die in order that the Ritzach should get his kapara, should be able to leave the Yom Mikvah. So the Gemara asks, why is the Kohen Gadol Shuldit? So the Gemara says it's the responsibility of the Manhigi Hador that they should be mispalo for all of the people in their door, that they shouldn't be rishon, and they shouldn't be murderers, and they shouldn't be ganovim. They should be mispalo, they should educate them, they should keep shiurim, they should by their hanhogia. Everybody should see from them how to fear zah. The Gemara says in Shabbos and in many other places, Mishi yesh bi yoradim chazveina moicha is nenash because of the averis of the others, because this is his violation of lishtiva lisita michshel b'shev b'al pasta. If I don't do anything about it, so that's, I'm not violating Lifneiva Bikumi Yaseh, but it's also a form of Lifneiva. Just like we have in Marisai, and I'm just minding my own business, I'm just doing what the Halacha says, but people will misunderstand this, and they'll be misled to do Averit. This is a Lifneiva B'Shevi Al-Tasa. So here also the Gemara has such a case, that those who are in a position, Yesh B'Yad Al-Limchas, Ve'Namecha, those who are in a position to give Machor, and they don't, they also violate the Sisi Lifniva B'Shevi Al-Tasa, and they will be held responsible for the Averis of the other people. Many times we learn in the yeshivas, so Rabbeim say shurim on fancy things, Ramlinezes, Chaims, Rabshimis, fancy terrorists, Tashas, Terutzim, Rabbanim speak in shuls. They give major addresses on political issues, on whom to vote for, on what we should think about the PLO, what we should think about the Divas Yisrael, and this and that, major things. And many times we don't speak about the most elementary things, but just Gezel V'Arayis, the elementary things. Someone was telling me, a chaver of mine told me that he has a friend, an associate of his, is in business, not a friend, who cheats right and left in business, and Frumayi cheats everybody in business. So he asks him, how you talking? You learned in the yeshiva all the years, you're a religious man, how can you cheat in business? So he tells him with a straight face, the rabbi in the yeshiva never said that there's anything wrong with cheating in business. Of course, it's a ridiculous time. What the rabbi have to say, by sinner from a sitzo, and a sitzo, and have to say. So the answer is yes. Like the Mesilas Hashem writes in his Hakdoma, there are so many dvorim shooting, there's only elementary, basic things. Everybody knows that we wrote cheetus, they slip our minds, we forget them. The start of the achrayas of the people who are looked up to, the rabbanim and the Rosh Yeshiva, they speak to the Talmidim, they speak to the Balabatim, the Balabatim do listen. But all right, they send the rabbi up to hold the sermon, to give a speech, and they do pay attention. Sometimes they listen to what the Rav says, and sometimes they talk to me the Rav. Sometimes they do follow, sometimes they don't. But the rabbi is in a position to give machor, to give musar, so it should be the responsibility of the rabbanim and the manhigim to give Musar and Tochacha the elementary things as well. And the Gezel Barai is just the Chazarov, Leisirtsov, and Leisidnov, and Leisirtsov, and Leisinov, and so on, the elementary things. Sometimes it's very easy to start with difficult things, it's hard, but to start with easy things is easy. Let's say, Yigom and Akal Lakovei. Many times I see Rabbanim have great Hatzloch and Rabbanis because they start off with very easy things, even Tochach, and first tell Balabatim they should put up mezuzahs on all the doors in their homes. Many Balabatim only have mezuzahs on the front door. Then we have to put up mezuzahs. So it's just an initial investment, costs $100 in one shot a year, and doesn't bother them. You have to hide them every day of their lives, that they have to come to Minyan every day, whatever. Come to put up mezuzahs. Or you tell them they have to... Someone has to check their homes to make sure the mezuzahs are on the right side of the right side. Shouldn't be on the wrong side. It's an easy thing. It doesn't affect them. Any time I face an easy thing, how to check whether the tzitzis are kosher or not. Many balabatim have tzitzis and are not kosher. That's an easy thing. And one shot of faith. Tell them how to buy a talis, how to check, make sure the tzitzis are good. Fill in. Then little by little, you go in Akala Lakovit. It's easy to, once you get Balabatim on a certain level of observance, of Shmiras HaMitzvahs,
one can get them to go a little further.
This is one of the considerations that the Gemara has, that a Chacham, especially a Chacham who is looked up to by others, must be careful of what will the perception of the others be regarding what he is doing. They may think that he's always doing Gavra Mutter, and they'll misunderstand what he's doing. They think that he's doing one thing and he's really doing another, and the thing that they thought he's doing is really Asur, and they walk away with the misconception that that's really Mutter. Gemara has a klal, we learned this year in Yeshnechlin and the Kolo, Gemara has a klal, Ein Lemeidim Halacha Mipi Maisen. That if I see a Chacham who paskins Mutter, Asur, in a certain case, he cannot later on walk out and say, oh, I heard from the Rabbi, I saw a man who said that this is Asur, this is Mutter. A Shaila can have 20 different aspects to it, and it may be that that case was Mutter because of aspect number 20, and in another case when it only has 19 aspects, it may not be Mutter. This is a very commonly violated principle. The Gemara says, "They made him halacha mipi ma'aser." We do that all the time. We look at the rabbanim, we look at the rabbeim, chassidish rabbanim, and so on. We say, "Oh, this old boy decided to do this. He's from the Huad Nami. It's mutter for us to do." And it's not always so. As the Gemara says, that's the problem of Marasayim. We didn't fully understand what the psak was based on, what the anhaga was based on. The Gemara has a lashon echulin in the first parak. The Rabbi Shua ben Zoruz was the brother-in-law of Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Shua ben Zoruz ate on Rabbi Meir that he ate alash al yerek, ate some vegetables, and paid shan. And he was not mafresh maisris. So based on that, edus, he to Rabbi paid shan al pi. Rabbi paskin that paid shan was chutz lorets, and never had a kedusha shniyah. Rabbi krachem lo kovshu on rebolim. He would never be kaddish paid shan. So the Gemara says, how could he paskin based on such an aid is maybe Reb Meir, maybe it was mafish, not sure, maybe Ahim, maybe Ahim, maybe he knew that they were mafish before. Maybe this, maybe that, just because he saw a tzaddik ate something, how does it indicate that everything is chutz lorets there? How does it prove it? So the Gemara says, no, Yeshua ben Zoruz was a gavra rabbi. So the Gemara says, chazi man gavra rabbi to kamaser alei. Stamach balavos will tell me that Reb Meir ate the vegetables in Beit Shan, but that being mafish maises wouldn't mean too much. Maybe he misunderstood. There could have been 20 factors there, and based on the 20th factor it's Mutter, and just the 19 factors alone would not be Mutter. You have to have a Gavra Rabba to understand what the Gavra Rabba was doing, why the Gavra Rabba was Mater in this case. This is a common problem, as I mentioned always. This is not only a problem by Balabatim, misunderstanding Rabbanim. This is a problem of Bnei HaYeshiva misunderstanding Rabbanim. You must have heard the famous story about Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, that one day at the series he wrote a letter to somebody, and then he looked the stamp and put it down, and then on the back of the envelope, instead of licking it, he went like this on his finger and he wiped the glue on the back. Oops, the haraya, that the glue on the back of the stamp is kosher. The glue, Rabbi Moshe must have been levad, that the glue on the back of the envelope is not kosher. That's what they were saying that day. The haraya, they saw Rabbi Moshe, that he didn't want to lick the back of the envelope. So then after the next day someone mentioned it, so it was Shivu, the family is Nizar, not to lick the back of the envelope, must be trade to glue. This has nothing to do with that. That the day before, they licked the back of the envelope and he cut his tongue. And the stamp, he's not going to cut his tongue, so he didn't want to cut his tongue again, so that's why he licked his finger. That's an obvious case. I would think that you don't have to be such a gavra rabbi to come asir alei to figure out that there may be some other time involved other than kashrus. But there are many cases like that, that the rabbanim have to be careful when they do things, and the Torah have to be careful. And then say Kaddish will walk back again, or they'll be saying, no, that he can philosophy, can rely on the psias, on the gimel psias, that he'll have at the end of the Kaddish, after the Tachman, after the Shmanes. So about the chassidim, they're machmas, and the regarding quotes Peskin, that the machmas, the chazan should walk back three psias. So the Rav and Yeshiva is machmas like that also. That's his hanhaga, that he walks back three steps after the chazar sashat, when he has yod, says he walks back three steps before he says tachanun, before he says kaddish. But amed v'om amurim, that's only when you say tachanun. All machlekes is when you say tachanun. Come to Yeshiva on Shabbos and Yontif a lot of times, and you have a bachar, and the man is darim karnomer, so there is no tachanun. So the kaddish follows. The Kaddish follows the Hazar Shatz right away. So there never was a machlokes. They all the Peskim agree that the Shliach Tzibur should rely, maybe rely on the Gimel Psiyut that he has, but he has an Ishmael Esau. So the Talmidim are not the Gavar Rabbis, and they don't fully understand what the Rav does. They say, well, they saw that the Rav walks back 3 steps, so they also walk back. There's a big difference. The Rav walks back, they saw the Rav walk back on the weekdays when they say, Tachnum. And Shabbos and Yantzim, they don't walk back. And you don't walk back 3 steps. A minor detail. No great crime. It's not, no one was mad or any Yisrael Shishish or any Yisrael Tevel or anything. But still, just a mush of a dovor, that we have to be a little more careful when we're medayim from others. And just as we are not so careful when we see the Gavur Rabbah do things, so we should visualize, and we are B'nai Torah, we sit in Yeshiva all day and we learn, so much more so should we realize that the Balabatim will not fully understand what we are doing. People who are not such B'nai Torah will certainly not fully realize. Shaila was brought up a few weeks ago. I had a little debate about it. I'd just like to mention it and say what I thought my opinion was. Shaila was, I was talking about in the yeshiva at Shabbos Iftar. Somebody called up in the yeshiva that in his community a girl came to the mikveh, out of New York, a girl came to the mikveh from Midtown. So the woman in charge of the mikveh asked, Where'd you come from? She didn't know who, she didn't recognize her. So she comes from Midtown. So the woman in charge says, came from Midtown, New York, all the way over here. Where'd you go so far? The mikveh was there. So the guy says, well, I'm single. They don't let me go to the mikveh there anymore. So the woman says, so Tapa, what do you have to go to the mikveh for if you're single? So she says, what do you think I'm going to the mikveh for? So the woman in charge of the mikveh thought she shouldn't let her use the mikveh. Are you talking? Single girl should use the mikveh? So the shaila was, what's Tapa to do? Do you say that you have to set a policy? You have to go check every woman and ask you, are you single, are you married? Bring your identity, bring your wedding picture. But if you know, the shaila is if you know in advance that the girl is single, she comes and she tells you that she's single. So should you let her use the mikveh now? So on the one hand, that is lechayr, certainly not. How can you be machshul? How can you have as a policy like that, let them use the mikveh? Maybe on the other hand, you should do mamayit in the Yisur. Maybe if you won't let them use the mikveh, maybe they'll violate an Yisur Karet. Somebody, perhaps they will violate an Yisur Karet. If you let them use the mikveh, so at least there won't be an Yisur Karet, so it'll be a much lesser Yisur. That's the shaila. So I thought that certainly not. But Chaim Reza has a tshuva where he discusses, he quotes a tshuva from the Netziv, the Meshav Dovah. He discusses a situation where a woman has a chatzitza de rabbonon, and she refuses to remove the chatzitz to the rabban before she goes to tefillah. So should the mitzvah asala tefillah, should the mitzvah lady allow her to use the mitzvah, or should she say no, she's not going to allow her to use the mitzvah? On the one hand, how can you allow the woman to tefillah the mitzvah, she has a chatzitz to the rabban, against the shulchan aruch. On the other hand, what are you going to tell her, go use the mitzvah, so she'll be an idol labash, but violating an issur karet? So at time Isaac quotes the netziv and the tshuva, he says that you don't let her use the mitzvah. If she doesn't want to observe the din of the rabban, so you don't allow, then you have to set a policy. If the official policy will be that we allow people to be tefillah in the mikveh, chatzitza de rabban, we allow single girls to be tefillah in the mikveh, so that means that we're being that's a lif neiva b'shev yaltas. It's not at all our lif neiva. So I would assume that it's also lif neiva b'shev yaltas. The reason, chachiyach chachiyach hasam yisteach, we have to try to encourage the people. Let's say, I fell over the famous door, we saw Salanta, that there was Mechayel Shabbos, a Jewish fellow had a job, he worked in an office and he was writing, part of his job was to write on Shabbos, so the Salanta wanted to be Machzi him with the Tshuva, so he explained that he succeeded the Shabbos that he should write less. Try to write less. Whatever is only the basic necessity, well, you write less than that, because Nefesh, he wanted to work on Shabbos, he wanted to have a job. So whatever saw Salanta, Mechayel him that he should do less, write and try to less. Try to write with the left hand, whatever you can. It wasn't a doctor. It was a poshut worker in an office. So on a private level, Ms. Thomas, there is such an Indian. He said, if I know that a single girl is a kutza, Ms. Thomas would be an Indian to go convince the girl, to go to the mikveh. On a private level, I would assume. Why should she violate an Avera Hamur? Let her violate an Avera Kal instead of an Avera Hamur. But Lechorana, I would assume that on a public level, I would assume that publicly, when a single girl comes to the mikveh, you don't give her a whole speech. You should know you wouldn't give her an avera. And you'll actually tell her on the mikveh, the avera should be less than otherwise. You don't give her a whole Gettysburg address,
they can let you use the mikveh. So that's I would have this feeling. I don't know. We'll look on the poskim to see what the din is. I would have the feeling that that should also be included in this issur of lifnei b'shevi al taseh, because we don't give a whole drasha b'shas ma'as. Privately, on a private level, I would assume that is different from a public policy. Gemara has yet a third consideration that a person has to have in mind the shas when he observes mitzvahs. Cannot just follow what the din is. Gemara says, Adam Pashim Shani, and the Rishonim interpreted in all the Gemaras, sometimes it has the first meaning, Adam Pashim Shani, there's a problem of chashad, that the chashad, the Talmud Chacham, that he's doing wrong, that he's paskening wrong, that he's violating an Easter. And sometimes the Rishonim interpreted in the Gemara, Adam Pashim Shani, their perception will be that something is mutter, which is really usher. And sometimes the Rishonim show in other Gemaras a whole different shot. Oh, the Mechashim Shaini, that Mechashim has to be Machmer al Atzma. Even if he's Mekel Achim, he has to be Machmer al Atzma. We all know the Gemara in Bav Metzia, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, Vayedai Kolam Et Adorach HaShiyoko Bav, Et Amais HaShiyasu. The Gemara says, Amais is Zehadin, HaShiyasu is Elefnim Yishir Yisadin. So this Bam is a mitzvah on everybody to go Elefnim Yishir Yisadin. Not just on the Talmud Chacham. It's interesting that Ramon Choshe Mishpat quotes a machloikis in Rishonim whether one is kofa on Lefnei Mishur HaSadin. Are you kofa? If a mitzvah in the Torah, it's just like you kofa on the other mitzvah. The kofa doesn't want to sit the sick, it doesn't want to eat matzah, whatever. It doesn't want to like tefillin, so you kofa on other mitzvah, so maybe one should be kofa on Lefnei Mishur HaSadin. So the Ramon had two opinions. I seem to remember one of the Rabbein and Yeshiva, I don't remember the Rabbi Relic, one of the others suggested perhaps that the both opinions really hold there should be kfiya. Why should it not be kfiya? It's a real mitzvah like all the other mitzvahs. The only thing is, if one, let's say a person doesn't want to eat matzah, so the Gemara says you pray for him, you force the matzah down his throat, so whether he likes it or not, he has fulfilled the mitzvah of matzah. He knows it's painful, he knows it's matzah, so you pray for the mitzvah, so he has the mitzvah. Person doesn't want to eat in sukkah, so you beat him up till he eats in sukkah. Doesn't want to like children, so you beat him up. What if the person doesn't want to go on the Lefnei Mishur HaSadin? So the shayla is, if you'll be kind to him, you'll make him go on the Lefnei Mishur HaSadin, will he have the kiyum of the Lefnei Mishur HaSadin? Maybe one only has this kiyum if he does it in the deepest halei. If he does it I did fear, maybe he lacks the whole kiyum. So if he lacks the kiyum, so he's not accomplished in being kind to him. That's the reason why some showed him all. Some parts can hold that you're not kofa on the Lefnei Mishur HaSadin. Not that this is a lower level of a mitzvah, no. The fact you have tzitzis and tefillin and shofar and lulav and everything, so you have the Lefnei Mishur HaSadin as another din. Every person is obligated to go the Lefnei Mishur HaSadin. To what extent, to what degree, so you have to judge each person individually. And on that, the Lefnei Mishur HaSadin, theoretically, in principle, there should have been tefillin. The other thing is that if you do kfiya, then you won't be accomplishing the mitzvah because it won't be done b'nediva saleh. The Rav just last week, before Purim, was discussing another Gemara. The Gemara has in Yidomit, after Falach and Aleph, on the part of Mishmartim as Mishmarti, so the Gemara says, Asu Mishmaras, Li Mishmarti, that a person should make siyagim in Hachokis, and so it's a sharp point sad, but this pasuk is not really speaking to the person. The pasuk is really speaking to the individual people. It's not just a tzibui to Desmond to introduce. I say siyagim l'atoyim. It's a tzibui to every individual person. He should make hachokas and siyagim for himself. The hachomim will kavei ay. If it's a worthy siyag, why is it found in the Gemara? You have to be machon word and it says in the Shavana. The answer is yes. The Mishnah Hashem explains the Gemara introduced the order that is shavu l'chol nefesh that applies to everybody, whether the Yom Nidon or the most pashut to the farmer, most pashut to Balabas. But every person, kifli madrigasa, should perhaps introduce kumris and siyagim and hachokis for himself. That's why the Rav is talking about the Rambam sheet a little bit. The Rambam has a unique sheet in Hilchos Mamre regarding bezni yochel levat and dibi bezni chavera. That one can a later bezni repeal an earlier takkana, that's only if it's a takkana. What if it was a siyog and a halchaka for an isa deraisa? The Rambam says that it cannot be repealed later on. Why not? So the Mefarshim interprets, Rav gave a different halakha. Rav said that he goes on takkana also. But if his others understand, the Rambam is only speaking about a siyog. If the bezni introduced a siyog, a halchaka for an isa, then even a later bezni, Bala B'chafim, cannot repeal it. Why?
a Bezn Acher has the right to repeal the Takana of a Bezn Rishon if it's a Takana Bezn. So you have rules and regulations of how the court system runs. An earlier court makes a Takana, later court can repeal it with such and such conditions. But if it's an issue of a Siyad for an Issa Deraisa, that's not really a Koyach Bezn. This Pasuk Hashmartim as Mishmarti is not speaking specifically to Bezn, it's speaking to every individual person. But the Tzar is, if you leave it up to every individual person, that you should decide for yourself what's a good siyah for you, and I'll decide for myself, and he'll decide for himself. So a lot of people will decide on a very low level. Balabatim will decide on a very low level of hachokas for himself. And the Talmid Chacham will decide on a very high level of hachokas for himself. And it won't, the Balabatim won't have enough of a hachokas. So the Chacham in Paskin, not that the Chacham introduced the Chacham. The Chacham in Paskin, the pshat in the Paskin for the Balabatim is on a higher level than they think. But it's not that they're introducing a takana, it's not a takana. They say you should realize that this is pshat in the pasuk. It's like, lemesaron akos debele rachachon. Sometimes you have a pasuk and it's unclear what the pasuk is referring to. Like malachas chalamoy, the Gemara says the Lashon, lemesaron akos debele rachachon. Or in case the Mishnah says, we grab a shukas takum, in other cases you have that. So when you have such an instance of lemesaron akos debele rachachon, and the chachamim determine what should be included in the pasuk, so once that's included in the pasuk, then you can't have a later bezin repeal that. It was never instituted lachatchila as a takana. That's lichtin averted. That's pshat v'shmartim as mishmarti. Even though, let's say, the balabat doesn't realize that that's on his level, he should have that level of chumra. There's no reason why I should be machmer on that. It'll never lead me to kach. No, that's what you think. Chacham tell you, you have to worry about it. But once the chachamim tell you, it's not the chachamim are making a takana. They're telling that this should be included in the chashash of the pasuk. That's what some of Hershon are talking about. That's why the Rambam held that a later Bezin, even greater than Chachmas Dominion, has no authority to repeal this Takana of the earlier Bezin, because it's not a Pitoris Takana. Chris Hamigin is a Takana, and Achanik is a Takana, other things are Takana. But a Siyog is not a Takana, that's a private individual din. That's Lachod Adam Yisrael, Mishmartim is Mishmarti. There are more Psukim. Sefer Charedim has another Pasuk, in addition to the Pasuk. That the Mesiras Hashem says it's really a din on private people, it's not really a din that was intended for Bezin. The Sefer HaRedim has a pasuk, Uvacharta Bachayim. Rebbe Shlom tells us, he gives us, Reina Sakhar Chanach Hayom Sachayim Vesanobes, Uvacharta Bachayim, what does that mean? So the Sefer HaRedim says, this is the motto for the principle. And whenever in doubt, you should choose a Bachar to Bachar. So then it's all of these psukim. Medina v'chnim yishur esadim, Medina shmartam es mishmarti, Medina Bachar to Bachayim. Mitzvah Sushon writes in Perik Yudalev, he speaks about Nikius. So then it's these psukim all lead to several different inyonim. At least, first of all, to an inyon to be machmir b'sveikas. Whenever there's a subject, the person has to be machmir. Also, there is an inyan to be chayshish for a shita sayochid, even if the halacha is nifsika in one fashion, like the rabbin, we still say that there's an inyan to be chayshish for a shita sayochid. The Gemara says, "Ve'elavyele divrei lekim chayim," but it means that shita sayochid is not really nitchas l'gamim in halacha. So the Mishnah Tzadikim writes in the Sefer on Brachos Zafirah that this principle, "Ve'elavyele," is the source of this idea that we find many times in the Gemara, that people are chayshish for a shita sayochid. We find it all the time in Yerideya. We have pointed out, B'Shem Ramayisha Salavayishi Zechan Arach, we find many times in Yerideya, where Ramah will say that the Mokhm Hefsi Merube, it's Mutter. What kind of business is that? It's also your doctor. Why is the Mutter Mokhm Hefsi Merube? So Ramayisha Zechan Arach said, obviously the Pshat is like this, that it's really Mutter. The din really is that it's Mutter. But because there's one Shita that holds that Tosa, so we're Machmer for that Shita. But the Mokhm Hefsi Merube is not Mokhm to be Machmer. So what is the meaning of being Machmer for Shita Sayyachat? If it's Mutter, it's Mutter.
They're separate mitzvahs. Mitzvah l'achar tevachar, and mitzvah l'pnimishur chazin. It's a different inyan. But even though the shikas halacha is nitzchiz, but it's not nitzchiz l'gamri min halacha. That's what it means. Eilu v'yelu, divya l'kim chayim. These inyanim, l'achar tevachar, and l'pnimishur chazin, include not only l'hachman v'sekis, it's l'choshish for shikas halachin, but includes also that we should do the mitzvahs m'hudoros, b'efen shal hidur, and the chlal, especially in the moment of Gezel Barayis, we should all be medactic more. As we mentioned before, the more the person is learned, the greater the person is a Tana Chochem, so the more it's assumed that he should be on a higher level of Yerushalayim, so the Tanir Chachamim have more of an obligation to be machmir b'sleikis, to be mahabir b'mitzvahs, and to be choshish v'shikis hayyachit. The Balabatim can understand this, fakir, that they should be taveris. Balabatim usually are taveris from Rabbanim, from Rabbeim and Yeshivis, and from rabbanim in positions in shuls. They do assume that the rabbi is holier than themselves. And they, the pashtus, the sechel balabatim usually is, they ask for the rabbi, yeah, he should do like that, we don't have to do like that. So the rabbi must, the dafke, go out of his way, even if he doesn't really have an atiyah to be machmir. He really thinks he should lead a normal life like everybody else, but sometimes he has to be machmir, not to put on a shtick, to act, put on a shtick. Not shtick. The Rav has to be machmer, certain madregis of kumris, so that when a balabatim look to him, they'll know, oh, that's a midas chasidus, and we can do a little lower. Of course, Mr. Sushan points out that this needs a great shikul. You have to weigh and measure what the situation is. Sometimes, it'll be yata, skara be'efsega, the person will be machmer. Say, the Rav and the Shul, our Rebbe Nishiva, will be such a tzaddik, and such a machmer, such a kodesh, and such a parish. The Balabatim will see that there's such a distance between him, between the Rav and themselves, they think that they'll never be able to attain anything near it. So then Pakelton is turning the people off. So sometimes even if the Rav is noita to chsidis, and the Rav is noita to precious and sitkis and chumras, the Daki should go out of his way not to be mafra, in order to be mekar of the Balabatim. So as Sean points out, based on the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch, that a person should observe the mitzvahs, even in the presence of those who are laughing at him, so the Lashon Shulchan Aruch is, v'layevish b'tnei ha-malikim ol. Shouldn't be embarrassed in the presence of those who are lechem. So Mr. Shem says, it depends what is he going to do. If he's going to do strictly what the din is, then you say, v'layevish b'tnei ha-malikim. What if he wants to go with his tzitzit sat, he wants to wear talis and fill and all that, he wants to do midas chasidus, it's something that could really, strictly speaking, the din doesn't require. So Fakir, if he knows that people will be malikim ol, then you're not allowed to say, v'layevish b'tnei ha-malikim ol. Fakir, he will be causing them to sin by laughing at his midas chasidus. If I leave, I'm also, I'm causing them to sin b'shevi l'adas, what, I went out of my way to tell them to laugh at me? No, but if I do this chassidus and precious and sitkis and Yerushalayim, if Nimi shows I did, and I know that other people are laughing, I'm not allowed to do it, because I'm causing them to sin. But then if Nimi b'shevi l'adas says what? Many times we have another consideration, even if a person is noita l'hachmir, there are more rights in Yerudeya, Reish Membeis, but not only does the Gemara have a klal, chochem she'asar, ein chaver or ashoi lahatir, the klal applies in the reverse as well, chochem she'hitir, ein chaver or ashoi lahatir. There are more, of course, rights of chochem she'hitir v'chol ha'ros, and that's not the statement that the rabbi says it's mutter, and I said that maybe it's us, we didn't, the case wasn't decided yet. It means it's ungenumen in this shul, it's already ungenumen that this thing is mutter. No moshe, because you go to a shul, where everybody sits b'shas k'rius ha'tar. He's going to come a fellow, he's going to stand Shiroch Tam, he's going to stand Chazorat HaShat Kriya Tatar. So we know Migarad in Shem Shulchan Aruch, he permitted to sit. And the Maharam Rittenberg stood in his Balabatim stand. He didn't tell the Balabatim had to sit. But here, the Boston quote from the Rishonim, and Rittenberg stood in Balabatim stand, and it shows that there's no Moses greater than him. Even in the same shul, that's how the Boston point out. All Vishas Chazorat HaShat. We know Migarad is permissible to sit. And the Midas Chassid is to sit. Let I come to a shul, I always tell, come to shul, the rabbonim, the rav and the shul sits. Older than me, younger than me, doesn't matter, he's older than me or younger than me. The ma'aseh he sits. I'll come in, I'll stand, b'shas chazor hashat, so I'll be a zayin for the rav. It's only known in here that it's mutter. I say shiurim in shuls of other rabbonim. So I say yeshia, many times I speak halacha l'ma'aseh. I cannot just say what I think the din is. I don't know what they do in that shul. Maybe the rav in the shul. Is noig l'hakum or noig l'hakum, whatever. So I cannot just say my opinion. So whenever I speak, I always try to be careful to explain why both positions are able to be able. Why I think that this is more correct. But a person has to be careful to explain why the other shita is not incorrect.
Moshe, Rav Moshe has in his tribute the Shadow we were just discussing last week, Kriyas HaMegillah over a microphone. So we discuss, Rav Shlomo Zalman has a tribute. He says he cannot understand for the life of him how anybody in his right mind can say that. Yoytze, Havdolah over the telephone, or Kriyas HaMegillah over the telephone. Tachmamish, not the sound wave. Sound wave converted into electrical current and converted to sound wave. How can it be? It's not a call. It's not a call at all. And then he says he discussed it with the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish said maybe yes. And he says, even after hearing the Chazon Ish, he says, we still can't believe it, can't understand how could it be. So many people are really convinced that Shlomo Zalman is right. So I think that he's really right also. I think it makes a lot of sense. And Moshe writes in his tshuva that he considers it a suffix. And he's discussing with the Rav also. At the same tzutzot like Rav Moshe has. Because I don't understand what the Chazon Ish exactly said. Shlomo Zalman quotes something from the Chazon Ish, it's not too clear. But for Rav Moshe has in his tshuva is the same as where the Rav explained why it could be that it's okay. So Rav Moshe says, I interfere in the Hapchila to read the Megillah over a microphone. About enough. You know that it's not so clear that you yoytze. You shouldn't do it. But what happens if there's a shul where they have to read the Megillah over a microphone? And then comes a new rabbi, or comes a visiting rabbi, whatever. Should he put up a fuss and make a whole war, wage a whole war, and say you have to dafke lay the Megillah, dafke the call, and not over the microphone? So Rav Moshe says, look here. So that's going to choose. He says, Kriyas HaMegillah is the Rabbanan, and it's a sfeik of the Rabbanan because he considers it a suffix, he's not sure how to learn Pshat. That's a sfeik of the Rabbanan of Kriyas. He doesn't get involved in the whole problem that we discussed last week. Did we Kabbalah, maybe Kriyas HaMegillah by Yom, did we Kabbalah, maybe Sadiq the Kabbalah. He says, you're not Ma'arif. So it's only going to be an issue that they read the Megillah over the microphone. See if he can be mistaken with Adam Achleikis and Echateis. But to make the whole issue, terminate. All the marshal and several shuls, they have the practice to divide the Kriyas HaMegillah at Purim time. I discussed Purim Shabbat. They have to divide the Kriyas HaMegillah among several different people. One bacha learns one part of the Megillah, another learns another part of the Megillah, and so on. So it's a machlekes in Shulchan Aruch. Magen Avraham says you're not yoytze. Magen Avraham quotes a din from Kriyas HaTorah that you can have different Bali Kriya learning different aliyahs, but you can't have two Bali Kriya learning one aliyah. One aliyah has to be learned by one person. If the Balkori is Mishpatik Bemsa, it cannot continue. So the new Balkori has to start from the beginning. Strange thing. So Magen Avraham says that Kriyas HaMegillah is the same as Kriyas HaTorah, you have to have one Balkori. All the other parts can disagree, they say it's not correct. So what's like La Allah? So the Achranim say, Lech HaTchil, Yishu Dichon, Shishu Magen Avraham. But with the Yevet of Shas HaTchach, you don't have it. So let's say you come to a shul, and that's where they have either Fir La HaTchil that they do like that. So why do they fear around like that? Some of the Firai, they want to be Makari of the boys. If the boys are watching the boys, they waste time watching the television, they're running around playing football, baseball, whatever. Let the guy spend a couple of hours, a couple of days, a couple of weeks preparing his section of Kriyas HaMegillah. So they fear I'm not sure the Tapona, it's Zorech. Mika Radin is good. Mika Radin, Kriyas HaMegillah, they can divide it amongst men. So you don't tell them they have to change their practice because of the Lachatchila, because of the Magen Avraham. They certainly not. That's their practice, so it should go vital like that. This is especially important when one visits someone else's yeshiva, one visits someone else's shul. The din in Yeridayus is beferish. Let's say there are Talmidim learning in the yeshiva, so the din is they have to stand up for the Rosh Yeshiva, even if they know how to learn better than the Rosh Yeshiva. Usually they don't know how to learn, they think they know how to learn better. But it says even if they know how to learn better than the Rosh Yeshiva, and let's say they have Balabatim in the shul, so the din is that the Rav of the shul, the one is officially, it says his name, he's the rabbi of this congregation, the Rav of the shul is the Marid HaAsra. So even if some of the Balabatim really know how to learn, usually they don't, they think they know, but even if they do, the Maas know how to learn better than the Rav, so the Feirush and the Yoridei, out of Kovod HaTorah, they have to stand up for the Rav, have to stand up for the Rosh Yeshiva. Let's say one time a Chacham visits someone else's shul. He's going to go probably, you have to do everything the way I want. The Marid HaAsra, so even if the one who's visiting knows how to learn better than the one who's there, the Rav and the shul is the Marid HaAsra. That's 100% dead wrong what they're doing. Usually it's not 100%, it's just an inner of Midas Hasidus. So then we say, Fakir, the person has to be careful not to observe the Midas Hasidus, not to be Noi Kumis. These are some of the considerations that a person should have in mind when tasking in Shilas and when being noik, Shmiras HaMitzvahs in his own private personal life. Just to repeat again, it's not sufficient just to follow what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. Whatever it says, that's the din, ben l'hakka ben l'hachna. That's in a din tov, someone asks me, what am I going to talk about? What are the other considerations? State of Yikra din is so hard.
What are you discussing? That's a Vidin Torah. You give a Dinah Sahar. We're not talking about Vidin Torah. We're talking about how to pass in a Shaila and how to have a Sachayim. So then you don't say, oh, but you give a Dinah Sahar. You have other considerations. You have to consider what perception will the others have of what I'm doing. Will they think that I'm doing wrong? So this is a Hashar. I'm not allowed to do it, even though it's really Mutter. Well, I think Avada, I'm doing right. They'll think that I'm not only am I doing right here, everything else is also mutter. It's also a serious consideration. Another consideration is even if I personally am not native to Chumrah, even if I personally am a happy-go-lucky person, I'd like to just live according to what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, but a person is in a higher position, there's a tviya, there's a demand upon him that he must be native Chumrah to a certain extent. Whenever this will have the hashpah on the balabatim, that if I will be machmir so much, then they will at least be on the level of the din. And if I'll only follow the din, then they will be 10, 20, 30, whatever, levels lower. So teitachnish. So I'll be machshav them indirectly. It'll be a marisan, it'll be a lefnibinisikim mitchal. And sometimes we say the reverse. A person has to weigh and judge in each and every individual case. Sometimes if the rabbanim will be machmir too much, teitachnish, then the balabatim won't have any shaykhs with them, it'll turn the balabatim off. Or a person has to be careful not to be machmir in a case where the psak is mekubal lahati. This would be a design out there for the Morad Asra, for the Rabbanim who are the Morad Asra in that situation. This was the theme that I wanted to bring out.
Okay, I turned it over.
An overview of the relationship of halakha to business and everyday ethics.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Sif, for your very kind introduction. First, I would like to say that I feel very privileged to be here today to participate in a ceremony honoring Reb Herschel, one of the most outstanding Rosh Yeshiva in America today, with an international reputation for Lomdus and for Midos. And as my dear cousin, I'm very proud that he is my cousin and my uncle. And I'm here today also. Reb Herschel spoke about the concept of Yisem Nikiyem Hashem Umitzrayim. Essentially, this concept involves an action that someone conducts that is intrinsically innocent, or perhaps it could be even a mitzvah. However, it is misinterpreted, or it might be misinterpreted by someone, and therefore lead to consequences that are undesired. The dark side or the converse of this type of action would be an action which is intrinsically evil. However, it gives the appearance of being neutral or perhaps even good. And this we call Genevas Das. And as Rabbi Sis said, that I come from the dark world of the, didn't use that term, but of the real world. Therefore, I would like to discuss the ramifications of the concept of Genevas Das, creating a false impression as it relates particularly to the business world. A story is told of an old commodity hedger by the name of Cornelius Soybean. He was advancing in age, and he felt his time was near. He summoned, therefore, to his estate three clergymen, a Catholic priest, Father McLaughlin, a Protestant minister, Reverend Spoon, and a rabbi, Rabbi White. And he told them that I feel my time is near, and when I die, I want all of you to participate in my funeral, and I'm giving you each $1 million in cash, and I want you to place it in my coffin. Well, the day arrived that when he departed this world, the three clergymen attended the funeral, and each apparently placed in the coffin an envelope. Several months later, the three ministers had a chance to meet each other at a ecumenical conference, and they were in a very giddy mood and began to discuss with each other the particular event, the soybean funeral. And the rabbi and the Protestant minister turned to Father McLaughlin and they said to him, "Father, did you really place that $1 million in the coffin?" Half embarrassed, the Catholic priest said, "Well, to tell you the truth, not the entire amount. For after all, I did take off the tithe for the church, small brokerage fee for myself, the rest I put in." Then they turned to the Protestant minister, and the atmosphere got a little looser. And they were drinking a lot, so they approached the Protestant minister and they asked him, "Spoon, what did you do?" And he admitted, "Well, I took off the tithe, and I took off some brokerage fees, and I prayed a lot for this man. He was a very evil man, that the doors, the gates of heaven should be open for him. I took off a lot for that." And then they turned, and then the rabbi, hearing this discussion, pounced and said, "Gentlemen, I'm astonished at your behavior. I'm shocked. Such unethical behavior." And then they both, with great indignation, turned to the rabbi and said, "What's all this self-righteousness about you, Rabbi White? What did you do? That envelope that you placed in the coffin was pretty thin. There must have been a lot of cash missing there." So the rabbi said, "Well, tell you the truth, what I did was, I wrote a check of $3 million and I took your two envelopes. I just cashed it against them. But right now, I see that you shortchanged me, so I'll be sending you a bill for the rest." This story presents many ethical questions, many serious questions. One of the most serious, of course, the false representation that the two clergymen, McLaughlin and Spoon, perpetrated. And this leads us directly to our topic of Gneva Das, creating a false impression. The Rishonim disagree on the source of the Easter. The Ritva understands the Easter to be a form of Gezel. Gezel Mammon, and there's Gezel of Das. Gnevas Das. It is Bechlau Lo Signor. However, the Rabbeinu Yonah understands that the Easter is a form of Lo Sishakru, a form of falseness. Several examples come to mind which demonstrate the high level of morality that Halacha expects of us in terms of creating a false impression. One, in a business context mentioned in the Gemara Bava Metzia, a merchant may not paint a utensil giving it the appearance of new when in fact it is old. However, the Talmud mentions in Shavuos a very interesting case. And this case is the following. The Rebbe would tell his Talmud that a certain individual owes me money, and he refuses to pay me back the debt that he owes me. In fact, I have one witness against him, but as we know, Eid Echad cannot be Mechayev Mammon, only a Shavua. So what I want you to do is follow. That when our day in court arrives, and I bring my witness, I would like you to come to court with me and sit on the sidelines. And when the judge summons my witness, give an appearance as if you are standing up as well to join the witness. This will confuse and shake up the defendant, and he will admit his guilt, thinking, I have two witnesses. But of course, in fact, you have no testimony to offer, and therefore you will only give an appearance as if you are ready to testify. You will not testify in fact. It would appear that the ends are very legitimate, but the means of achieving the end, creation of a false impression, is what is at issue here. And the Talmud tells us that this involves an iser of mitzvah sheker tircho. Most Rishonim understand that it is not a deraisa, it's rabbanim, but nevertheless, it is a form of falseness, a type of falseness that involves the creation of a false impression. One of the most prevalent types of creation of false impression in the business world is the generation of goodwill that is undeserved. And this exact case is discussed in the Talmud. Shmuel tells us that an individual may not be gozev das habrios, even in connection with an akum. And an illustration is given. An individual may not sell a non-Jew basar trefa, meat that is organically defective, becheskas shchuta, under the assumption, with the impression conveyed, that it is basa shchuta. Basa shchuta is more, it is healthier meat than basa trefa. And this halacha is said even under the conditions when a fair price is charged for what actually is received by the non-Jew. The Sma and the Shulchan Aruch points this out based on the statement of the Korban Nisanel and the Chulin. That even if the Jew is charging a fair price for what he is giving the Akum, he may not do this. Why? Because he is generating false goodwill. The Akum will be machzik tova v'chinam. He will experience a feeling of gratitude toward the Jew for giving him a bargain opportunity. That is the impression that is created in the mind of the non-Jew, that he is getting a bargain. And because he is given this impression, he will feel that he owes something to the Jew. And he will be machzik tova v'chinam. As it will turn out, he will return a favor which is undeserved. Rav Yosef David Epstein, in his sefer, Mitzvahs HaShalom, among many other svarim that he wrote, posits that the Gneivas Daat interdict is violated immediately and does not stand suspended until the Akum returns the undeserved favor. The interdict consists of the stolen feeling of indebtedness, and that is violated immediately. There are many interesting nuances in respect to this particular halacha of generating goodwill in an undeserved manner. The Talmud in Chulin relates the following story. Talmud tells us that a host may not give the impression of conveying a magnanimous gesture of hospitality when in fact he is doing nothing of the kind. In Talmud's time, opening a barrel of wine for a guest constituted a magnanimous gesture of hospitality for the reason that the remaining content of the barrel, since it is exposed, its quality could suffer, and therefore it amounts to quite a magnanimous gesture. However, in the instance where the host just happened to sell the barrel of wine to a retailer before his guest arrived, in this instance, no loss would be suffered by opening the barrel. Since the guest would not anticipate that the host, just prior to his arrival, had sold the barrel of wine, if this was in fact the case, the host has a disclosure obligation. He must inform his guest that he had just sold a barrel of wine, and therefore, to remove the possible misimpression that he is conferring his guest with a magnanimous gesture, it is simply gnanimous das to lead the guest on thinking that the host is being very magnanimous when he is in fact not. And the Talmud thereafter relates that Rabbi Yehuda had as his guest Ula. And this exact thing happened to him. He had just sold a barrel of wine to a retailer, and he did not inform his guest Ula of this event. Now there are two versions of the Talmud. One version tells us that in fact he did make the disclosure. And this would be consistent with the rule mentioned before. But the second version, Talmud says, he did not make the disclosure because Ula was very, very dear to Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda assessed in his own mind that had it been required on his part to incur a large expense for the purpose of demonstrating a magnanimous gesture of hospitality, he would certainly do this. Now, as it turns out, the expense is unnecessary as he had just sold a barrel of wine to a retailer. But he was certain in his own mind, on account of the particular affection that he had for Ula, that he would have surely done this. And therefore, disclosure obligation was unnecessary. It is very peculiar that both the Rambam and the Tur omit the second version. And usually we have the rule that the halach is according to the Lishna Basra. And yet both the Rambam and the Tur omit this point of leniency in Gnevas Das Lor. The Sefer Lev Aryeh in Sefer Neskulin passes the following. That there is a good reason why the Rambam and the Tur omitted this point in Lor. The Rambam and the Tur felt it had no general applicability. It is a story that applies only to people of high moral character such as Rabbi Yehuda and Amora. Rabbi Yehuda could rely upon his self-assessment. And therefore, he would be relieved of his disclosure obligation. But an ordinary person could not rely on such an assessment. When our feelings towards our fellow man are untested, and we just make an assessment in our mind what we would do hypothetically if a particular situation would arise, our assessment is completely unreliable. As it often occurs, we may imagine that we would do all types of things for our fellow man, when it's only in the realm of the hypothetical. But when there is an actual concrete situation, we perhaps will find all types of excuses. And this particular idea reminds me of a very humorous word that is said in connection with what actually happened at Kriyas Yamsuf. Rav Meir says that when the Jewish nation approached the Yamsuf, that it was the Shevet Binyamin that went first into the Yamsuf. And what was happening was that all the Shvatim were arguing, disputing, who would have the honor of jumping in first. And finally it was resolved that Shevet Binyamin took the honor. Rav Yehuda says, Lo kach hoya hamasa. That's not what happened. What did happen was that the Shvatim were disputing who should not go in first. No one wants to jump in first. Until Nachshon ben Aminadab, as we know traditionally, jumped in first. Now Rav Heschel mentioned Eilu Eilu Divrei Elokim Chaim as a general cloud we have, and this seems to be almost impossible to apply to this particular machlokas between Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, because they are arguing in a metzias what actually happened in the Yamsuf. But as the word goes, Eilu Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, before they approached the Yam Suf, everyone was brave. Everyone was boasting of his what he will do. Everyone said he would jump into the Yam Suf, Al Kiddush Hashem. But when they were confronted with the stark reality of the Yam Suf and the Mitzrayim behind them, then many people lost their courage. And that is what Rabbi Yehuda says. Lo kachoy hamasa, when it came halacha l'maisa, when it came the actual act of jumping in, then people were arguing, I will not jump in first, you will have the honor of doing it first. Until Nachshon ben Aminadab jumped into the Yam Suf, Al Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, what the Leib Aryeh is saying is that the Rambam and the Tur both felt that Rabbi Yehuda, a man of very high moral character, he could rely upon his self-assessment, and therefore it was not required of him to disclose that he had just sold a barrel of wine to a retailer, and therefore involved no expense. He assessed that he would incur any expense necessary for his friend Ula. But an ordinary man cannot rely upon his self-assessment, and therefore he would be incumbent upon him to disclose this particular fact. If he would not, it would amount to Gneivas Das. Now here's another nuance of Gneivas Das. Many times when we undertake an action, we may have a primary motive and a secondary motive. Both are operative. And both are motivating factors. However, if someone would question us as to our motives, and we would only reveal our primary motive, and we would conceal the second, we would only reveal, excuse me, our secondary motive while concealing the primary motive, this would be another form of Gneivas Das. The Talmud discusses this case in Yevamos Daf Samach Hei. Then when the Almighty told Shmuel that he should go to Beis Lochem and anoint David Melech Yisrael, Shaul Bahargeni, how can I go when Shaul will get wind of this and he will regard me as a conspirator and have me killed? We just talk about, just reveal the secondary motive while leaving the primary motive undetected. And here we have another nuance of Gneivas Das. What happens if an individual inspires a false impression, but by neither act or word on his part, he was completely passive in inspiring the false impression? Does he have a corrective obligation in this instance? And here we have Mesechtas Makos, a Mishnah that apparently addresses itself to this question. We are told, if an individual is a manslayer, he killed someone b'shogeg, and he finds himself in Ori Miklat, and then the Zakenim of the city come over to him, and they want to be machabed him with some honor. Perhaps they want to give him shlishi, machdiyona, perhaps. Mishnah says that the Rotzeach is obligated to tell them, Rotzeach ani, I am a manslayer. If they say, the Mishnah tells us further, that it just makes no difference to us, then he may accept the honor. And this is derived from a pasuk, Zed Vaha Rotzeach. This is the word of the Rotzeach, which the Talmud understands to mean that the Rotzeach has to speak up. There has to be a dibur. He has to speak up and tell them, Rotzeach ani, I am a murderer. Now, it is unclear in the Mishnah what exactly is the case talking about. Is it a case of mistaken identity, that the Zakenim are not aware that this man is a Rotzeach, and therefore the whole proffering of the honor was done mistakenly? Or is the Mishnah referring to a case where they knew fully well he was a Rotzeach, and therefore this particular Mishnah has nothing whatsoever to do with the sugya of Gneivas Das? Now, the Rishalmi, Makos, and also in Horios,
derives from this Mishnah a different halacha, and that is that if people in a town feel that an individual is expert in two mesechtos, when in fact he's only expert in one, and apparently in those times there were gradations of honor that differed according to the level of expertise of individuals, that Rishon says that we can derive from the Mishnah and Makos that the individual must reveal to the people that you are mistaken. I am only a baki in one staff, but not in two. The same manner that the Rotzeach is obligated to reveal to the townspeople that he is a Rotzeach, and therefore perhaps they do not want to honor him. This assimilation of the two cases indicates that what is referred, how the Rishami understands the Mishnah, it is a case of mistaken identity. And therefore, the obligation, the corrective obligation, would be extended even in the passive case, when the individual did nothing, neither by word or deed, to inspire the misconception about him. And we could also understand readily why a pasuk is necessary, Zed Vaharitzeh, because the conventional law of Gnevet Das perhaps would not be so stringent as to require an individual to correct the misconception in the passive case. And the chiddush of the pasuk is that it extends even in that case. Now, the Rishali understanding is not shared by the Ritva in Makos. The Ritva in Makos tells us that the Mishnah does refer to the case where the townspeople are fully aware that the individual they desire to honor is a Rotzeach. And the Ritva elaborates, he says, that it's very peculiar that the Mishnah begins with the word V'kayotzebo. Similarly, this seems to connect the 11th Mishnah in the second parak to the previous Mishnah, the 10th Mishnah. And apparently the connection is elusive. In what way is this Mishnah connected with the previous Mishnah? The previous Mishnah speaks of the case of a Ben Levi that killed someone, the Shogeg, and he was already living in an Ari Mikvah. Can he remain there? Is that his golus, or must he abscond to another Ari Mikvah? And the Mishnah tells us quite clearly that the Ben Levi must go to a different Ari Mikvah. He cannot remain where he is. And the Ritva says, we see the connection is very clear. The purpose of golus is to humble the Rotzeach, to isolate him from his familiar surroundings, so that he is brought the day here or tshuva. And therefore, the two Mishnayos tell us the same idea. The first Mishnah speaks of a Ben Levi that killed someone in his own town. He cannot remain in his familiar surroundings. To effect atonement, he must go to a different Ari Miklat. In the same vein, Kayotzebo, if people in the town want to honor an individual, and they know fully that he is a murderer, it is incumbent upon the individual to humiliate himself and tell and remind everyone, including himself, of the heinous crime that he committed, that he is a Rotzeach. This type of humiliation, this reminding himself and everyone else of his status, will affect the necessary atonement. It will bring about the necessary humility. So therefore, according to the view of the Ritva, the Mishnah does not speak at all of the case of mistaken identity. And therefore, there is no compelling case that the corrective obligation extends even to the passive case. Now, I would like to relate this last case to an instance that happens to many of us. Many of us here are teachers, and sometimes, as professors especially, are absent-minded, not Rosh Hashivas, of course, that we may sometimes add up the points on an exam incorrectly. And a student that perhaps deserves a C for his exam would receive a B, sometimes perhaps even an A. There could be even such a large mistake. And of course, in this instance, the student had done absolutely nothing to create the false impression of his abilities. He's entirely passive. Neither by word nor by deed did he create the false impression. The question is, an ethical question, does the student have the obligation to tell the professor that he made a mistake in adding up the points and therefore give him his correct grade? Now, it seems to me, according to the Rishali, that the obligation is clear-cut. Just as the individual who is being honored on the basis of knowing two masechtas knows in his heart that he's only an expert on one tractate, must correct the townspeople and must tell them that your opinion of me is too hard. Actually, I am not so learned as you think. I think there is an exact parallel here in case of the grade. See, my uncle doesn't agree. But according to the Ritva, that understands that the Mishnah in Makos is referring to not a case of mistaken identity, but rather it is a case where the townspeople are fully aware of the status of the Roseach, there is no compelling case to extend the corrective obligation even to this instance. Now, there is one point of leniency that Talmud mentions in connection with the corrective obligation associated with generating a false impression. And a very fascinating story in this respect is quoted in the Masechta Sfulin. Ma Zutra was traveling from the city of Saqqara to the city of Mukhuza, and he happened fortuitously to chance upon two sages, Rav Safra and Rava. And when they saw him, Rav Zutra said, "The rabbis did not have to trouble themselves so much to form a greeting party to meet me." He thought they actually were aware of his whereabouts and came as a greeting party. Whereupon Rav Safra, who was an Ishul Emes, many instances in the Talmud relate stories about Rav Safra, how he was very didactic in the midah of Emes. Rav Safra felt incumbent upon him to say that had we known that you were coming, we would have extended ourselves even further, but the truth is we didn't know you were coming. And when he made this statement to Rav Marzutra, Marzutra immediately became crestfallen. And why? Because evidently Marzutra considered himself to be a very important personage, such as the President of the United States. And when the President travels, everyone is aware of his whereabouts. And therefore he felt that he was important enough that the people in the next town should have known that he is about to arrive. And this would prove that he is sort of a non-entity, it's a non-event, that he is coming, that no one really knew about it. So this hurt him deeply. Rava, Rav Safra's colleague, upon seeing that Mazudra was crestfallen, protested to Rav Safra and said that you have hurt him terribly by this revelation, that we have not come to, that we really didn't know that you were coming. And Rav Safra answered, we have to tell him the truth. But Rava said, no. Iyu ate anashe. There's no need for us to disclose this to him. He is guilty of self-deception. There is no valid reason for him to interpret the fortuitous encounter with us as constituting a greeting party. And since his interpretation was a very personal one, it was one that does not lend itself to objective reality, would not be the type of interpretation that the great majority of people would give it, he is therefore guilty of self-deception, and therefore the corrective obligation does not apply in that instance. Now, with these general rules, I'd just like to spend a few brief moments talking about applications of the Gnevet Das in the business world, and it seems to be quite prevalent, and it reminds me of the story of a great Maggid who came from an urban area teeming with different vices, came to a little town, and he gave a very shocking type of Musar talk to these townspeople, and he told them different vices that they could possibly encounter in the city, and they should be careful to distance themselves from all these vices. And when he completed his speech, the townspeople, they simply were aghast, and they came out. And their first comment was, "We never knew such averus existed at all." That's supposed to be a joke, by the way. Now, in the business world, frequently, firms that are selling products and services want to create goodwill. They want to create the sense of a bargain. And they can do this in various ways. Many times a firm will run a sale. And of course, the word sale is a very neutral term. And it may be interpreted by the public as simply a clearance sale, that the item was not selling at its previous price, and the seller was stuck with an inventory that he could not unload, and he felt the only way he could accomplish this would be if he would lower his price. So here there is no deception, and although when the price is lowered, people that previously were not interested in buying the product are now interested in it, this is simply, there's no deception, there's no false impression that is here created. Now, what would happen though, in the instance that the seller could not sell the product, and he advertised that it is a bargain sale, he stressed the word that it is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and he would add various adjectives in his demonstration and his ads that would indicate that the product will be going up in price and will be snapped away quickly. Here there would be a clear cut of creating a false impression. I remember about 2 years ago when the interest rates were really soaring to the stratosphere, and there was a small size bank in the South, South Carolina. They got national attention of the media by announcing on television that they were going to break with all the eastern banks, and they're going to lower their prime lending rates 2 percentage points below what the eastern banks were charging. So the eastern banks were charging, let us say, 21%. They were going to go down magnanimously to 19%. And they said the motivation behind our act was the concern that the crippling effect high interest rates had on economic activity, that it would cause a terrible recession. They invoked feelings of patriotism and feelings of altruism behind their move. Now, in actuality, it was simply a business consideration that led them to do this. The bank in South Carolina essentially dealt with small farmers, and the small farmers could simply not afford to pay 20% interest on loans to get their machinery and their equipment and their seed. So the only thing that made sense in terms of preserving the economic vitality of the community and preserving their customer base, that is, in short, to stay in business themselves, the only thing that would make sense would be on a cost-plus basis, that if it cost them 16% to acquire funds, they would simply add something to that to make a profit and a small margin at that. That would be a sensible business policy. So by invoking a altruistic motive in their behavior, they were at the very least putting in focus a secondary motive when they were concealing their primary motive, and they were doing this in a very blatant way. At this point, the Leib Aries analysis becomes very relevant. Was this altruism that they invoked, was that something that was independently come across, or was it simply inspired by the fact, by the prospect of making higher profits or minimizing their losses by changing their policy? could very well that they were simply deluding themselves into this altruistic motive. And Heschel talked about before about the thin assurance of din. Perhaps the only way we could be mekayimet is if we have medivas halev. And they perhaps were imagining that they had this warm feeling of altruism, when in fact it was completely inspired by the prospect of making higher profits. Now, firms often use what is called weasel words in their advertisements. They compare their product to some non-relevant factor, and therefore, thereby, they free themselves of any possible suit. For example, a manufacturer of ammonia would say that that his product cleans like a white tornado. So he's not comparing his product to competing brands, but rather to a white tornado. And this is a non-relevancy, because if you would want to carry the metaphor to its logical conclusion, then the effect of the ammonia would be not only to clean the kitchen floor, but to completely lift it up from the ground, as a tornado would do. But by using this type of weasel word, this amorphous, meaningless type of metaphor, they free themselves from any type of challenge. In many instances, the use of a weasel word could be a tactic that creates a new element in a product, a fantasy that people believe in. And perhaps this is another ethical question, but just what an off-the-cuff opinion, that if a firm is successful in creating a fantasy, then it becomes part of the product, and they're entitled to charge a fee for it. But in many instances, the weasel words do create a geneva das, a false impression. Let me just give you two quick examples of that. That if one airline has a first-class accommodation, which it calls ambassador service, and it proceeds to patent that name, and then proceeds to advertise it, we're the only airline that offers ambassador service. It creates, in the mind of people, a sense of uniqueness, which is not there, because people don't generally know that ambassador service is just simply a name for first-class accommodations. And all the airlines have the same first-class accommodations. And one blatant example is when a coffee manufacturer claims that its coffee is mountain-grown. And fact is, there's no other typology where you can grow coffee except mountain-grown. So with the uninitiated, certainly it creates for them a false impression. And finally, I've interacted more and more with people in business, and I'm very happy to say that many people in business are very honest, and they are seeking halakhic guidance of what constitutes ethics in the various situations that they come about. And I'm truly moved by this when I hear these questions that involve losses of quite sizable amounts of money. But just to quote another very frequently geneva dot, false image that is created, that many times a firm wants to create the image that they are much, much bigger than they actually are. And there may be just two people in a firm, and they will always sign all their correspondence as senior financial consultants or senior financial analysts. If there's a senior, McLeod is equal junior. There has to be a junior also. And in fact, many of these little firms, there is no junior, it's just a senior. So, and firm at the same time may tell people that it has quite a lot of experts that work for them. So if someone asks them a question, they don't know the answer, they say, well, Charlie, he sits at the desk to my right, he's out for lunch, he will know the answer to the question. But there's no Charlie that sits there. So if a firm creates a false image and thereby generates a full sense of goodwill, this is geneva das, and this is interdicted by Jewish law. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much, Rabbi Levine. Everyone is invited for a short break for coffee and cake.
Then we have the
Pesach. Followed by a Pesach seminar by Rabbi
Bernard
Weinberger, Mickey Weinberger.